pit. I was in the pit. You were in the pit. We all were in the pit.
The final season finale of Parks and Recreation is over, but we are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps. Hello, everybody. I'm Josh Wigler, and I'm so excited. I am joined here by somebody pretty special. I've known a lot of ballers in my day, but no man balls harder than the man I'm about to bring up. He's kind. He's intelligent. He's a person I'm deeply proud to call my friend, though I don't like how he has bashed Trisha Tanaka in the past. It's Mike Bloom.
Josh Wigler. Just pretend I said that like Chris Traeger and shot the double guns at you.
That's just how I always imagine you say my name.
Just Josh Wigler.
Mike Bloom.
I'll have an awkward wig on for like half a season while I'm filming another movie.
Oh my God. What was the movie he was filming?
That was when he played Drew Peterson in like a Lifetime original movie.
I'm untouchable, bitch.
Yeah, I think that was like half of like season four, I think, was when he randomly had like a different hairstyle because of that.
Side note, when I worked full-time at MTV News, my work computer's desktop was Rob Lowe as Drew Peterson was my desktop background for several years.
God, I'm trying to bring the image to mind, but I can't think of it right now. I'll have
He looks like Ron Swanson, but like with gray hair.
Oh, yeah, I remember that picture.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. It's very surreal. It's very strange.
Extremely surreal.
Extremely surreal. So that's my brief little tangent. That was a big part of my life for a little while.
Good. I'm glad that image has stuck with you for so long. And here we are. Worlds have collided. Your desktop background has almost come to life, even though Rob Lowe is no longer with the show, as we approach Parks and Recreation's final season.
It's crazy that we're finally here. It's upon us, and we're in the future now.
I know we're in 2017, and I love
so much has changed.
I do love all the in jokes that they even have so far. You know, like with the weird like hollow iPads and the reference to the Cubs winning the World Series. I feel like there's like other episodes of shows that have done kind of the same thing. The Simpsons has obviously done a lot of episodes in the future, but I always like when they make jokes like that.
Yeah, I mean, when I found out that this is what the plan was, you know, when they start teasing that at the end of last season, that Parks and Rec is going to jump into the future. I don't know. What was your reaction when you knew that they were going to do a little tiny bit of a time jump here just into 2017? Not too far, but far enough to make a difference.
I thought it was I mean, obviously, it was a big format change in that everything plays out pretty sequentially in the other six seasons of the show. To have it jump at that point 3 years was a little crazy. That being said, I kind of salivated over the end tag, though I'd say about 70% of that was because of the John Hamm cameo. And John Hamm is one of those guys that I would do anything for and anything to.
Oh, my God.
He really is. I don't know why, but as soon as I saw him, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I was flattered to see him in the season premiere tonight. I don't know how much more we'll see of him, but in general, I would say it was the tag at the end was like, I don't know if it was jumping the gun too much, because I know leading up to the finale, Michael Shore, who was one of the creators, said like, we wrote this to be something that could be interpreted as a series finale. So if the series had ended on that, I would have been okay with it. But now that they're like, oh crap, it's renewed, we're gonna need to write about all this stuff and basically situate our final season in the future. We'll see how it goes.
Is John Hamm your Tammy too?
Yep. Yes, he is. Yes, is he is.
Your Hammy too?
If Hammy stripped buck naked in a library,
it'd be hard to resist.
You better believe I'd go behind the circulation desk.
Even with the mask on?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it'd be tough. Yeah, I think it's been fun, and I like the little subtle changes to all the characters right now. I think it resets everything into a pretty funny place. I was so tickled that they're calling Jerry Terry now.
Yeah.
How many iterations of Jerry's name have we gone through at this point?
So he started out Jerry, though we found out later that his real name is actually Gary, and it was a mispronunciation or a misprint. And then when he retired and came back, he called himself Larry by accident, so they called him Larry, and then he told the story about Terry tonight. So I think that's all the iterations we'll have. It's interesting how much the Jerry butt monkey joke developed, because remember back in like seasons 2 and 3, it was so much of like a more subtle thing, and then they just like, man, they mined that joke for all it's worth.
They went for it. They really did.
Really went for it.
It was obviously something that was working. So just lean into it as much as you can.
I guess they definitely had to steer into the curve with that joke. Which, I mean, poor Jim O'Hare, and I follow him on Twitter too, is like, seems like the absolute nicest guy. And I feel like only he could play someone like that. Though I do love the whole storyline. I think it was two seasons ago about his extremely hot wife and children.
Yes, yes. That one of them, the daughter, I forget her name.
Millicent.
Yeah, Millicent that Chris falls in love with.
Yeah, that's...
I believe that the stories from the actors is... I know that at least Chris Pratt has said that Jim O'Hare, who plays Jerry or Gary, however you want to say his name, is by far and away the dirtiest person on the set in terms of their humor, their sense of humor.
I can imagine that.
He's just disgusting.
Interesting, because there was... Chris Pratt seems like an extremely dirty person as well. By the way, Chris Pratt,
America's sweetheart. He's the new Jennifer Lawrence.
I was gonna say he's probably number two on my list of men I would do anything for and anything to. Just because he was one of these people. Like, first of all, can we talk about like this cast of Parks and Rec basically started, except for Amy Poehler, complete unknowns, and the fact that they've like all kind of catapulted into their own fame. Like Chris Pratt, obviously. Starting the major Marvel movie last year, is starring in the Jurassic Park reboot / sequel this year. And then Aubrey Plaza has been making a name in indie movies. Aziz Ansari is like selling out Madison Square Garden. Nick yep. Offerman had a comedy special. Retta was a stand-up comedian. Her stock has risen substantially. Entertainment Weekly did a nice spread on it. But like these people, with the exception of Amy Poehler and Rob Lowe, like they came in as nobodies, and they have like made a big name for themselves.
It's crazy. The cast on this show is insane. And when you compare it, I feel like to the fact that this has not been the greatest show in terms of viewership, in terms of ratings, in terms of people actually coming to see Parks and Rec. But I, for my money, it sports maybe the best cast on television. Certainly in the comedy world, these are all really super accomplished people. And you're right. I think Chris Pratt the most is the one that's amazing to me. Obviously, he didn't start out as a megastar on this show. He was, you know, the big, funny, doughy guy that you remember from, I don't know, The O.C. and One
Everwood.
Tree Hill. Yeah. It was Everwood. You know, you remember him from those kinds of shows. And now here he is like being, you know, sort of this lovable lug. And that was kind of his type. And he has, you know, managed to turn that into being an action hero. You know, he's kind of Andy Dwyer in space in Guardians of the Galaxy, but in Jurassic World, it seems like he's playing it fairly straight based on the trailer. So the fact that that guy has still hung around, you know, two seasons after his star really started to rise, a lot of these people who are still in there, you know, some people have gone along the way. Rob Lowe and Rashida Jones obviously have left the building. But they're, you know, these people are all super, super talented, super capable people, all of whom you could see, you know, headlining their own shows and movies once this is all done. It's really an impressive cast.
Except for Mark Brandanowitz.
Oh, yeah. And that's the guy Paul Schneider left to like be the movie star. What happened to that guy?
That's the story that always happens in Hollywood, though, right? It's always usually, except with the exception of like Eddie Murphy, is like, oh, the person will leave to do movies, and it completely flames out. And I mean, that happened to Mark Brandanowitz. And
Brandanowitz.
Yeah. Whenever I quit something, friends have referred to me as that. So that
really,
nickname, I specifically when I quit one job, some guy told me he was going to call me Mark Brandanowitz.
Mike Bloom Danowitz.
I'm Jewish enough, so
I know we don't need to make that even worse. So we've talked a lot about the show. Let's talk about what we're doing here. So the final season has just premiered. Mike and I just finished watching it about a half an hour ago. We talked earlier in the day and decided, you know what? It's the final season premiere of Parks and Recreation. It's not a show we've talked about on post-show recaps before. Who knows how much we'll talk about it going forward, but at the very least, we wanted to talk about the season premiere. For me, I would say right now it's my favorite comedy on TV, maybe not of all time. I think I'm still a Curb man at heart. But Mike, this is a show that's near and dear to your heart as well, right?
Yeah, to give a little bit of background about how I got into this show, I did not watch the first three seasons live. I was in school at the time, and I'd heard so-so things about it. I think the popular consensus among the first season specifically, which is very tonally different from the rest of the series, is that it was kind of made to be like an Office knockoff. At that point, The Office was kind of in its downward decline. Steve Carell had just left, and they were using the same type of style, this like mockumentary style, going into an office workplace. Amy Poehler, her character at the time, was very much like a Steve Carell buffoon, who just unfiltered buffoon. And there was, you know, Mark Brandanowicz was aimed to be like the Jim Halpert character. Anne was supposed to kind of be like a Pam character. And at that time, you know, Chris Pratt playing Andy was more like the jerk ass Roy as an Office comparison than he is now, of being this like delightfully goofy, immature person.
Right. He started off as a jerk.
Yeah. He started off as a complete jerk. And
just
he was
like the total lazy jerk who's just, you know, over dependent on his nurse girlfriend.
Yeah. So for one reason or another, I didn't watch the first three seasons. Then once I graduated college and I obviously had more time on my hands, I got my first ever Hulu Plus subscription, and I binged them all before the fourth season aired, and I fell in love with this show. There's a lot of different reasons. I feel like one of the major reasons why I absolutely love this show is because I pretty much am marrying a version of Leslie Knope in about like 5 months.
You're kind of Ben Wyatt-ish, I feel like.
Yeah, that's what my fiance always compares us to the two. I feel like I'm a Ben demeanor with Andy-like qualities. But I definitely feel like Ben a lot of my days.
You've come a long way since Icetown.
Yeah, exactly. Unless it's a trick. Is this podcast a trick?
This podcast is a trick.
To help me with things?
Yeah, by the end of this thing, we're not letting you off the air until you admit that Trisha Tanaka is dead is a superior episode of Lost.
That is my ice town.
That is your ice town in terms of podcasting?
I think it might be. Yeah, so I love the show for a variety of reasons. I would say the great thing about it is that it is a goofy show that has a lot of heart. And I'll compare it to, you know, you have your Lost, A.G. Mass has his Twin Peaks. I would say my two like go-to shows would be Arrested Development and The Simpsons. And the Parks and Recreation mirrors them both very closely in terms of not only do they have a fantastic core ensemble cast, but they have this arrangement of randomly entertaining supporting characters that come and go. And I'm sure we'll get into a conversation later about some of our favorites, but it's just amazing to see like this town actually get fleshed out over the course of these seven seasons. And there are characters that we actually know that don't exactly work in the parks department. And that being said, as I talked about before, the show does have a lot of emotion to it, which is great. I'll admit that sometimes they pour it on a little too thick. It got a little formulaic in this past season, season six, where it was like, Leslie has a problem. She blows everything out of proportion. She goes to Ron. Ron gives her advice and she solves the problem. Like, it's a well done formula. But that being said, it was a little too well done last season. But I love the fact that they're making these choices and writing these storylines that are still staying true to the characters. You know, people are changing jobs, but nobody is like doing things that are so out of character that it makes a big left turn in terms of writing.
I think actually the Simpsons comparison is really apt, because I think that more often than not, the Simpsons has a lot of heart. You know, that show, that cartoon, been on the air for freaking ever at this point. And I feel like more, you know, the episodes of that show that I remember the most are the ones that had like really great, you know, kind of uplifting, touching stories, very human stories. Even when, you know, tragedy was in the mix, there was always something hopeful, like a Bleeding Gums Murphy type of episode or something like that. I feel like there's so much, it's so easy to have cynical shows. Like Arrested Development was fun and super clever and super witty and super creative, but often very dark. And,
yes.
And this is not. Parks and Rec is, I feel like it's the brightest show on TV, not just in terms of intelligence necessarily, because I mean it's very smart, but I feel like it's the most optimistic show that's on in terms of sitcoms. It's always, you know, there's never going to be a tragic ending, or if something takes a tragic turn, there's going to be a silver lining, and it's going to be like a silver lining covered in whipped cream, and actually the silver lining is just the name of a Waffle House. You know, like every time something bad is happening, it's actually going to have some sort of positive spin. So you know to expect that with Parks and Rec. Like there's no suspense going into this final season thinking like, is somebody not going to make it? Is April's kind of indecision about her job, is that going to, you know, her her feeling bored in her marriage to Andy. Is that going to lead in a divorce? Of course it's not. That's not this show. And for me, this show is kind of like comfort food. Like, you just know what you're going to get. It's going to be really easy to swallow. It's going to taste delicious. Read into that however you'd like. But I just think it's a show that you want to give a big hug. It's a show you want to just climb all over like John Hamm.
Yeah, I completely agree. And even you saying ham, when you're talking about delicious food, made me think of delicious ham.
I love delicious ham.
It's great. Well, let's get a Hawaiian pizza after this.
Oh, man, that sounds like the best thing that we could do.
But I agree. I completely agree in that it's a show that shows immense amount of heart, but it doesn't deal with too much tragedy. You know, even a storyline like Leslie's recall vote, where this job right. that she'd worked so hard to get was essentially taken away from her over the course of what seemed to be like 6 months, on paper sounds extremely depressing and gutting, knowing Leslie as a character, but they built it into a really uplifting storyline, and then they segued it really nicely into the same season, her getting this offer for this job at the National Parks Department. So it seems like something always works out. You know, even, you know, Ben goes through like three different jobs and keeps going back to that same accounting firm, but he's able to find a job that he really likes to do. It seems like at this point everyone has found a job they like to do except for April, and I think that's going to be her big storyline this season. Parks and Rec has definitely ballooned out to more of an ensemble show where it seems like each character has their own storyline, whereas in earlier seasons it's probably mostly about Leslie and Anne, and maybe a little bit of Andy, but it seems like this season it's all about like everyone's going to have their own story and everyone's going to either find love or find a job or get that park built or make up with your friends. Everyone's going to be holding hands at the end, singing 5,000 candles in the wind like they do. And it's going to be beautiful.
Oh, it's going to be gorgeous. But I think that's a testament to the fact that, you know, as the show has progressed, these actors have really stepped up and owned their roles. And again, as we covered, a lot of them have become pretty well known and a lot of them have really proven themselves. And I think that, you know, it's just the writers really wanting to give these guys lots of fun, good things to dig into. So you said you thought that maybe we would be talking about some of our favorite characters. Who's your favorite character in the show? Who's your number one?
So if I had to choose between the main ensemble, I would probably say Ben is my number one. Part of that is definitely, you know, I see a good amount of myself in the character we can talk all day about performances. Adam Scott is just he was born to be like a straight man in all of these scenes.
Big Survivor fan, Adam Scott.
Is he?
He is. He was at a Survivor finale one time. He was caught in the audience, and Jeff Probst is talking to somebody. I forget which season it is, but he's in the audience right past Jeff Probst, and he's like trying desperately not to look into the camera, but it's absolutely Adam Scott.
Are you sure this isn't an episode of Party Down?
It's not. It's real. It's real. This is a real thing. You can Google it.
I'm gonna look this up now after we're done. While we're eating our Hawaiian pizza.
Yes, we can look at it together.
I think he does correctly what Mark Brandanowitz never really resonated as a character, in terms of he's able to delicately play the straight man role in conjunction with characters like Tom and Andy and April. But he also has his own quirks to him. Probably one of my favorite episodes is season 4. I think it's called like The Comeback Kid. And there's this subplot where Ben is unemployed, and it's just where like Chris goes to visit him at the house, and he talks about how he's created this new restaurant called the Low Calzone Zone.
Oh yes, the Low Calzone Zone.
And he also made like a claymation movie, and he plays it. And it turns out to be like 15 seconds long. So
yeah, he's good. I mean, he speaks to the. I don't know about you, Mike. I don't know too much about how you grew up. I can speak to myself. Like, that's what my childhood was like. I was making claymation stuff. Obviously, I'm a Batman fan, as is our good friend Ben Wyatt. You know, I see a lot of myself in Ben Wyatt.
Would you openly weep in a Batman suit as well?
Probably in the right circumstances.
Yeah, and that's what I love about it too.
You know, tug on the right heartstring, and I'm a crier.
And that's the thing I love about what they did with Ben too, is that like, what with Mark, they really didn't give him any sort of depth in the two seasons he was on. With Ben, they gave him all this stuff. Even coming him in, they gave him the Icetown thing right off the bat. And in season 3, I think you have that episode where like he goes on that press junket and they keep bringing up Icetown, and you see him slowly become unraveled, and we get to see a different side of him. And I think once the writers realized they could unlock that portion of Adam Scott's performance, then they're like, okay, let's give him a bunch of cool, crazy stuff to do. And I think now they've really settled on a great medium of Ben for, like, he's the normal person, but he's like, he's a different normal than someone like Anne is.
Right. And I think that that's what they were, you know, they were trying to do the straight man, normal guy kind of thing with Brandanowitz. And I think that the problem there was, I think he was too sarcastic. I think he was too cynical. And you got a guy like Ron Swanson, who's going to be very cynical anyway, but it's so over the top that it's a caricature. Whereas with Brandanowitz, it was very close to being what you would find in a real office. Like, he's like the Jim Halpert, but without a lot of the nicer qualities, I think. And with somebody like Ben Wyatt, you know, he could be cynical as well, but he is also just, it's more that he's realistic. You know, he views things in a pragmatic way, but he also has this very childlike wonder quality about him too. Anyway, I would upvote Ben Wyatt over Mark Brandanowitz, you know, every single day of the week.
Oh, yeah, every day. And if, I guess if, since we're so high on Ben Wyatt, I guess if I can give a number two, it's tough because I do like Ron a lot, but part of me kind of feels like he's become kind of a meme at this point.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give my number two is Tom Haverford.
Oh, really?
Because starting off, I feel like season one, when they didn't really know what was going on, I feel like Tom was like the saving grace of season one in terms of like they understood at least partly what his character was. And I love what he's become as like this wannabe mogul. I thought the whole Entertainment 720 storyline was really fun. And actually, you know, he didn't have a lot to do in some of the middle seasons. And, you know, the whole him and Anne thing is still a little...
That was among the worst storylines this show has ever done.
But I loved the stuff that they did last season with the whole Tom's Bistro thing, and like watching Tom be like storylines on his own, really realizing what he wants to do and like actually putting his skills to work is like, it's cool watching the trajectory of his character. And Aziz Ansari, for someone who hasn't really acted before the show, does a fantastic job. And I still use some of his colloquialisms, whether it's food rakes for forks or chicky chicky parm parm.
We saw some chicky chicky parm parm tonight on Parks and Recreation.
Yeah, that's all they serve apparently at Tom's Bistro.
Well, they serve lasagna as well and spaghetti to go.
what about you? Do you have a favorite non-Ben Wyatt character?
Who's my favorite character?
Non-Ben Wyatt character.
Well, he wouldn't be my favorite anyway. I love Ben Wyatt. I like Tom a lot. I think you might like Tom a little more than I do. That whole storyline with Anne really does kind of bring him down for me a little bit. I used to love Chris Traeger so much just because he was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so optimistic about everything. And I love the way that he would say things. I love literally the greatest thing of all time. Chris Traeger, literally the greatest character ever. I really enjoyed Chris Traeger a lot. On the show currently, I mean, Leslie Knope, how can you not, you know, rally behind the Leslie Knope cause? She's incredible. Amy Poehler is amazing. You know, we're recording this just a couple of days after her really great performance at the Golden Globes. Amy Poehler is just a rock star. Amy Poehler does, I am on board. And just everything about Leslie Knope, super ambitious, doesn't take no for an answer, so dedicated to her cause, you know, overworks like crazy, is the nicest person on the planet, always remembers your birthday, even, you know, when she wants to make a big deal out of your birthday, if it's Ron's birthday, she'll just get him a quiet room and a steak. She's incredible. She's the best friend you've never had and you've always wanted to have. So Leslie Knope is pretty top of the pile for me. And then Ron Swanson's a god.
Yeah, how could you
say anything else? You know, he has become a little bit of a meme. You know, cats that look like Ron Swanson is a great thing. It's a glorious thing. But I don't know. He's kind of the bedrock of this show. He's just completely inflexible. He's never going to change. He's always going to have secret stashes of gold. And he's just always going to be just a wonderful, wonderful man. So I'm a big fan of Ron Swanson. I just love Nick Offerman. And he's kind of the guy who I think has really broken out in kind of a, you know, he's certainly not Chris Pratt level. He's not an Aziz Ansari, but I feel like Nick Offerman has really carved out this very Nick Offerman-y niche for himself here. Niche Offerman. where he's just like that solid, kind of stern, grumpy guy. And I'm excited to see him do a little more dramatic work. He's going to be in the new season of Fargo.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited to see what he does there. That's another thing is I'm sad that this show is ending, but I'm really pumped to see what everybody does afterwards.
I completely agree. I think, I mean, Chris Pratt, I feel like, is a good sign of what everyone is going to dive into in terms of other work. And I mean, even like the comedic actors that they brought on here, probably my favorite of the supporting characters is John Ralphio, played by Ben Schwartz. I would actually say if I'm asked the question, like if you had to cast someone who would play you in a movie, who would it be? It would probably be Ben Schwartz, but not Ben Schwartz as John Ralphio, just Ben Schwartz.
Well, then you could also say Andrew Garfield would work as well.
That's true.
They are the same person.
But Ben Schwartz, I mean, he came into the show like a relatively unknown comedian. He'd written a few things. And then I feel like that kind of catapulted him into this regular status as a character on the show House of Lies on Showtime.
Yeah, I think so.
So it's cool how like even these smaller roles or, you know, Mo Collins was a breakout star on Mad TV and she disappeared for a while. And then she was able to find kind of a small time home on Parks and Recreation as well. I love, as a comedy nerd, I just love the characters and the actors that they're able to bring onto Parks and Rec, because they're able to get everyone from, you know, Nick Kroll, who's this big comedy actor, a character comedy actor, to
the douche,
Crazy Ira and the douche. They were able to, and then to being able to bring on Joe Biden for a cold open it's incredible the length that this show has been able to go to, despite, as you said before, being such a rating starved show. It might have gotten the Obama bump a little. I remember there was a speech where Obama talked about how Sasha and Malia love watching Parks and Rec.
Is that right? I don't think I remember that.
There was something where, like, I think Aziz Ansari had done some sort of opening speech for some sort of ceremony, and Obama had come up and thanked Aziz and said that Sasha and Malia loved watching Parks and Rec. This is probably back in, like, season 2, season 3.
Yeah. Parks and Rec is an internet darling, I feel like.
Yeah.
Someone tweeted my way a couple days ago the list of Reddit's favorite TV shows. It was a survey that was taken in 2014, and in the top 10, Parks and Rec makes it at number 6 out of 300 shows. So there's a lot of love on the internet for Parks and Rec.
Is that, now it's interesting because I think, unfairly so, I think Parks and Rec gets compared a lot to Community. I'm intrigued with this survey.
They're
neck and neck. Interesting.
Community is number 7, right behind Parks and Rec.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'll just talk more about the NBC comedy former juggernaut in general. Like, when it was that lineup, when it was Community, Parks and Rec, The Office, and 30 Rock, I would say that was just as strong as like the heyday with the Friends and the Seinfeld and everything. But the complete opposite spectrum in terms of ratings, like nobody was watching any of these shows with the exception of The Office. And it's crazy how like the quality still stayed the same, but for some reason people weren't coming back to watch this show.
I feel like people started getting more interested in like your Breaking Bads and your hard dramas. I feel like the comedy stuff, people just started gravitating away from, at least in terms of it being destination viewing.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's become much more of a renaissance of TV drama. Nobody has really said much about comedy. Maybe in the past couple of years with the quote unquote comedies of like Transparent, Orange is the New Black, etc. But other than that, I mean, outside of like Big Bang Theory and Modern Family, nobody.
Well, I don't even necessarily mean that. I feel like shows like Modern Family and Big Bang Theory, those shows are like very palatable and very easy to just like plop down and watch with with your family, with your loved one, with whatever. It's like a very routine show. And I think shows like Parks and Rec and Community, even a show like Bob's Burgers that everybody I feel like is digesting right now. I feel like those have become Netflix shows and Hulu shows and on-demand shows. I think that's where a lot of the love for those shows come in. And I think that TV is just struggling to kind of catch up with all that right now.
Yeah. And it's weird though, because I mean, those shows are still gaining. I mean, Parks and Rec has been nominated for multiple Emmys, and it's in its first few seasons, it was even nominated a couple times for Best Comedy Series. yet it's struggled so much in the ratings, to the point where you brought this up earlier when we were talking, Josh. I believe right now with the final season, they're going to pull a Celebrity Apprentice. They're going to double up on the episodes until The Voice starts. So
yeah,
this show is going to end in a month and a half.
They're burning them all off. They're finishing season 7 as quickly as they can. And I think that they started doing that at least with season 6. They were pairing a lot of episodes together. I think maybe season 5 they were doing that. It's kind of a miracle that we've gotten to 7 seasons, that, you know, we're getting a 13 episode final season here. The fact that we've made it all these years, you know, is nothing short of a little bit miraculous, I think, just because it hasn't done tremendously well. And I feel like this show just always, like, it's always on the razor's edge of, is it going to get renewed or is it not going to get renewed?
I think it definitely shows that. I would argue that the season finales of seasons 4 through 6 could all pass as series finales. If you told me, okay, this episode is going to be the series finale, I would say, all right, that wasn't bad. And I think the writers definitely did it that way because they weren't sure what was going to happen.
Right. So let's talk a bit about this premiere, but let's start with where we left off in season 6. Where did we leave off in season 6 that sets us up for season 7, Mike?
Is this before the time jump or after?
You take your pick.
So before the time jump, we'd seen that Leslie had, she'd been juggling throughout the latter half of season 6 after the recall with this, you know, with this job of, should I take this job at the National Parks Department or should I stay in Pawnee? And ultimately she decides to go to the Parks Department, which I was thrilled about, had I not known there's gonna be a time jump, because I am not a fan of those storylines in sitcoms where it's like, this person has this great opportunity, but then they choose to stay home and be with the ones that they love. But she chases success, but she's able to apparently bring her office to Pawnee as we fast forward 3 years later, and she's apparently running the National Parks Department out of Pawnee. And Ben is, for some reason, in a tuxedo, but we'll find out in a second. It's because it's the town's bicentennial and he's being honored. And throughout
Man that, of the Year.
Yeah, Man of the Year. And that's not the Robin Williams movie. But as we don't really find out too much other than the fact that she ended up having the triplets, which don't get mentioned too much in these first couple of episodes.
We don't even see them, I don't believe.
No, we stay a lot in the office and you know, in Chicago for some reason. We very rarely go home. So maybe
the
in
Big
the,
Apple.
The Beantown.
Beantown.
So we see that. We see the glimpse of our beautiful man, John Hamm, and we get to see the appearance of Terry. But other than that, a lot is left wide open, including where did all these other characters go? And throughout this premiere, specifically the first episode, we find out a lot about where the ensemble has been in these 3 years, and it appears that they have kind of the band's broken up a little bit.
Diaspora.
Yes, exactly.
Scattered to the nine winds. So whose story did you like the best? What were you the most surprised by or the most tickled by in terms of where these characters have wound up?
It's interesting because I also had to think back a little bit. Like when Donna said she was in real estate, I was trying to remember, and I believe there were a couple of episodes where like the storylines were about how Donna is a great job selling things and how she decorates houses really nicely. So I thought those were like nice. I always appreciate when writers, especially in their final seasons, touch upon those minute details of characters that like kind of get glimpsed over. I'm trying to think. I do actually, I mean, I have to love Ron and the very good building company, just because I do love that Ron kind of finally quit the government and went off on his own.
Private sector.
Yeah, and went into the private sector and is kind of on his own. And I feel like I would want to work for Ron Swanson.
Oh, yeah. Ron Swanson, I kind of look at my, I compare my father-in-law to Ron Swanson. He's a carpenter. He builds houses. Everything he does with his hands, I'm just like the doughiest, nerdiest human being on the planet. I'm totally not worthy of my father-in-law. So I view a lot of Ron Swanson in him. Like, I feel like I just see this guy who's very, very serious, very salt of the earth. And that's Ron Swanson. And I feel like one of the things that I was really amused by is just how we're seeing all these little things about how 2017 is vaguely different. You know, there's little things that are different from where we are here in 2015, like technology wise. You see April and Andy have, you know, these Grizzle iPads and phones that are see-through, that are really high tech. And then, like, the upgrade for Ron, if you noticed, is he has just, like, a flip phone on his belt.
Yeah, he has one, not even a flip phone. It's one of those, like, standard phones that you get from, like, 2001, just kind of, like, on a loop on his belt.
Yes, it's great. Like, that's, like, the concession that he's made. He's living in 2017, and he has, like, the most basic 2001 phone. And I thought that was incredible.
Yeah,
I
do hope we get to see another Lucy Lawless cameo. I know the Ron gets married and you know, has kids storyline was maybe not the most loved by fans, but I thought it was a nice turn for the character, and I loved Lucy Lawless's performance as well. Plus, she's friggin' Xena.
Oh, yeah. You know, if anyone's going to settle down Ron Swanson, it's Xena the Warrior Princess.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see her again. You know, it might be the kind of thing where we just... But that's the thing is, you know, most shows, you know, they're not going to be able to get Lucy Lawless to come in and guest star in every single episode. And once they reach that eventuality, they'll come up with some really dramatic way to write that person off. For a show like Parks and Rec, they just don't need to show her all the time.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. She still exists. She's still a part of Ron's life. We just don't need to see her in every episode. Whereas another, you know, show would probably have, like, put her in a car and hit detonate and blown her up.
Or they could have gone the route of Happy Days with Richie's brother. Just like, right. Oh, she went upstairs and she never came back down.
Right, right. Exactly. Or who's the forgotten sister in the Winslow family?
Yeah, Denise, I think.
I don't even know.
I think it's Denise Winslow. Maybe I'm mixing up my Cosby Show and my Family Matters references.
I don't think it's Denise. What was her name? I want to look it up real quick because I believe it's Judy.
Judy Winslow.
Judy Winslow. And yeah, Jamie Foxworth went in a different direction.
Yeah, so I mean,
you can go ahead and Google that as well.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. I'll
just NSFW.
Oh boy. Awesome. I have enough NSFW pictures of John Hamm on my phone, so it needs some company.
Oh my gosh. Oh my God.
You bring up a good point about you know, the Lucy Lawless question. I do feel like since they know it's the final season, they're able to kind of parade out these characters for one last loop around the track. And we see that tonight in the second episode, which I feel like is the final bow for both Tammy Two and Councilman Jeremy Jam, who have both served as pseudo antagonists at one point or another. So it was fun to not only see them hook up, but to see them kind of get their final moment in the sun.
Kind of amazing that I don't know how many people have thought of Jammy as a possibility, but it makes so much sense when you stop and think about it.
Yeah, especially when you realize the cool thing that I like about Parks and Rec too is that, like you said before, Josh, it's never too dark. There are quote unquote villains in this series, whether, you know, it was like Bobby Newport and the campaign manager.
I love Bobby Newport so much.
But then Bobby Newport turned out to be, you know, lovable, affable Paul Rudd, who didn't really like who kind of got backed into the election, and Catherine Hahn's character just turned out not to really care about anything. Then in like season five, you have Jeremy Jam, who starts off as like this big jerk, but it turns out that once he, like, you know, he calls Leslie his best friend at one point, it's clear he's just a very lonely, sad man.
Yes.
So I do love that, like, there's nobody who is like absolutely evil. Maybe Parker Posey's character as Leslie's old friend who moved to Eagleton. But other than that, there's no one that's like inherently evil, Tammy accepted.
Yeah, I mean, Tammy too is evil.
Yeah, but damn if she isn't, if Megan Mullally isn't just the most fun person to just do a scene with.
Oh my God. And it's amazing. I mean, her and Nick Offerman are married in real life, so that chemistry really translates really well into every scene that they're in together. It almost makes me sad that they can never really, you know, push the button again in terms of like having Ron fall for Tammy again. They've rounded that corner. It wouldn't make sense to go back, but I really wish that they could, just because every scene where Nick Offerman is just like wrapped around Tammy Two's finger is just the best.
Yeah,
so funny.
Those were some of the best episodes in the earlier seasons, just because it's sort of Ron's Ice Town, in that we really got to see a side of his character that we had never seen before. We got to see Nick Offerman kind of unwind a little bit. And, like, you know, I think one of the first Tammy Two episodes was when they got drunk and like went on a bender and got married again. And Ron shaved off his mustache.
Right.
So like I loved seeing that side of him.
Yeah, it was very good. And I just like the idea of Tammy Two making, you know, forcing Jam to eat nothing but steak and whiskey so that he has to wear a diaper everywhere he goes.
Now when you first saw him and you saw the whole Jammy thing and you saw that he was dress like Ron. Did you make that connection initially, or did it sort of dawn later when Leslie literally said, like, you look just like Ron?
Well, I knew that Tammy was going to be in the episode, so I wasn't that surprised. But I was very happy to see it. It's a great direction for the show to go. But if you looked on their website, you know, they had previews for what was coming up in tonight's episode. So I kind of knew, but I enjoyed it nonetheless.
What speaking on these supporting characters? What
also,
other...
by the way, Leslie Knope's Tammy impression.
Oh my God!
Can we just take a minute to bow down and worship Amy Poehler for her spot on Megan Mullally?
She does so many amazing things on this show, but I
was she even what was she even calling Ron? She's like, you big hunk of wiener meat. It was so good.
In a perfect Megan Mullally cadence.
Yeah, it was really great. Oh man, that was really funny. The whole like training jam to evade Tammy 2's advances was so good. Like, what was your mistake? You didn't check the armoire.
Tammy hid in my attic for 6 days, subsisting on rats and rainwater.
Yeah, rats and rainwater. I also just love the legend of Tammy too, with how Ron hypes her up. Like, with the rules of Tammy, you leave no man behind and you must protect yourself against chemical warfare. Tammy does not abide by the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, the thing I love about this show, and I mean, in comedy, the humor comes in the details. The more specific you are when you're doing a scene, the funnier it is, and the more humor can be pulled on that for subsequent scenes, depending on what sort of structure you're doing. And I just love... Parks and Recreation gets the specifics of things so right, specifically with like this Tammy stuff. They'll bring up specific situations and they'll use these word choices that are just so to the point that it's amazing.
Yeah, it's very funny stuff.
So I guess, you know, speaking on these like supporting characters thing, do you want to brainstorm what are some other supporting characters that are guest stars that you're looking forward to hopefully reappearing again in this season?
Oh, well, they got to go Jean Ralphio. I mean, now that we know that Tom's, you know, career has taken off, the question is, where's Jean Ralphio in all of this? Is he involved in all of this? Has he been asked out? Has he been boxed out somehow? So that's the big one that I'm really looking forward to seeing. We're also, you know, we're starting to see more, that the Newport family is going to be a big deal. You know, this is actually something we should talk about. The big thrust of the season seems to be Leslie making this one, you know, final plea to get this great national park up and running. And you know, that's sort of like the big item on the docket right now. And she's in direct opposition with Ron, about this. What do you think about this, that we're kind of being set up for? And obviously, it's going to end peacefully, yeah. But it seems like the big thrust of the season is Ron versus Leslie.
It's interesting, which I know is such a vague
civil war.
Yeah. But the thing is that, like, again, they're not forgetting who the characters are. They're still friendly to each other. We saw that even tonight with the Ron and Jamie episode, that they were still able to work together towards a common goal. And they're still able to speak to each other somewhat cordially, despite whatever happened in Morningstar. I think it is interesting that they're set up against each other. I believe that's happened in a couple of other episodes, more of a short term thing of like Leslie and Ron are against each other for one episode, but then they make up at the end. I mean, I'm going to give it like half the season before they make up. I think there's like an episode like five or so is called Ron and Leslie. So I'm assuming we'll get some sort of insight into that. But it's an interesting enough concept. I don't know if it holds water as a plot point for the entire last season, but it's something different and it still stays inherently true to the characters. So I can't complain about it too much.
Yeah, I just like the idea of you know, Ron not backing down. You know, this is you know, Ron isn't going to just bend over and let Leslie have the park because it's the nice thing to do. That's not who Ron Swanson is.
No, exactly.
So I do appreciate that quite a bit. I think that's pretty fun.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm just thinking more guest stars we want to bring on. If we're bringing on Jean Ralphio, I actually want to see all of Jean Ralphio's family as well.
Yes.
Jenny Slate kills as
what's
Mona
her
Lisa.
Name on the show? Yes.
who is, I think Jean Ravi called her like a pyro, a nympho, and something, and like a schizo all in one. Yeah.
She's the worst.
And I loved Henry Winkler as the dad too.
Oh yeah, well I mean, anytime you bring him into the mix, it's good.
Yeah, though again, I'm such a big Arrested Development fan, all I can imagine him as is Barry Zuckerkorn, the lawyer.
They should just have speaking of Arrested Development lawyers, they should just put Bob Blah-Blah on the show.
Scott Baio?
Yeah, that'd be perfect. As Bob Blah-Blah.
As Bob Blah-Blah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I want to see Paul Rudd back as Bobby Newport.
Yeah, I believe we're getting that. And another big thing that I'm really glad we're getting back is Billy Eichner as Craig.
Yes. Yeah. Well, he wasn't on the show tonight.
No, but I think he comes and goes. I mean, last season he was technically working for the Parks Department, but he only appeared in like a handful of episodes in the latter half.
Right.
But I think I was looking at some pictures on the last day of set, and Billy Eichner was in those photos. So maybe he was busy doing stuff on the street, or he has a new series that's coming out. So maybe he was working on that. But I love that Craig character so much.
I know he was really good. I would like to see. I'd like to see Louis C.K. back.
Yes, as the awkward cop.
Yeah, I always felt bad because I thought that he and Leslie could have worked out, but then you get Ben White in the mix and it's no contest.
Yeah, I did think that one episode where he returned was a little awkward.
It was awkward, but in a good way. I thought it was good awkward. And you know, it fits. I feel like Louis C.K. does that great thing where he's just like the eternal loser. You know, the lovable loser, not the loser who you're happy is losing. So I would like to see more of him. Maybe he could have some kind of happy ending.
Mm-hmm. So I guess we'll jump right to the big guns. I know that, you know, we will see the return of Rashida Jones and Rob Lowe for at least one episode. I would like to get your opinion, Josh. What do you feel about the Chris and Anne pairing in general?
You know, I feel like Anne was always a problem character. Just in terms of, I don't know that the show ever really knew what to do with Anne. So they would just constantly be, they would try to pair her up with people. They paired her up with Chris. You know, they paired her up with Brandanowitz first, and then they pair her up with Chris, and then they pair her up with Tom, and that's a disaster. And then she's single for a while, and then she goes back with Chris. So I feel like it was always just like her story was always in relation to her love life. Not even, you know, completely forgetting the fact that she starts the series off in a relationship with Andy.
Yeah.
So that was, it was either that or just her being Leslie's best friend. And Rashida Jones is a really talented actress and really smart as a writer as well. And I think is really interested in being a filmmaker and producing. And I feel like, you know, as fun as the show, as this must be to work on, there's not a lot there to really sink your teeth into. So I don't begrudge her for leaving at all. And, you know, it's a hard character to lose just because she is Leslie's best friend and she's been on the show from the very beginning. But Anne, to me, always felt like the character that they just did not know exactly what to do with, but which was still hanging around somehow. And I think that they did a decent job of pulling her in closer when they kind of made her the head of the health department. I thought was a good choice. But in terms of her and Chris together, you know, it's fine. Whatever. I mean, I believe, you know, Chris Traeger just wants to be the most like happy, best person possible, wants to be an incredible doting father and an incredible doting, you know, lover and all of that stuff. So I buy it that he would be super into Anne. But I was sadder to see Chris Traeger go than I was to see Anne.
Yeah, I would say, I guess starting off by speaking more to Anne as a character, I agree with you in terms of she was like a pseudo Ben in terms of she was a straight woman, especially to a lot of Leslie's stuff in their partnership. But I think, and they kind of lampshaded this a little bit when they brought Ben in. I feel like Ben and Leslie kind of got pushed to the center more as the pairing, and Anne and Leslie were kind of, and it was kind of left in the middle, like, what do I do now? And I remember there was that whole plot line where like Anne realized that she didn't really have a personality. She just took personalities from all the boyfriends she had. And that was kind of a weird storyline to go off of. So I agree. I think Rashida Jones left at a good time. I still was not, honestly, I was not feeling too much the chemistry between her and Rob Lowe. Maybe Rob Lowe was channeling painfully awkward Rob Lowe from the DirecTV commercials at the moment. I liked the storyline more when it happened the first time when they were dating and the joke was that she didn't realize that he had broken up with her because he was so nice to her after they had broken up. I didn't necessarily buy them coming back together, but I think it's also because Leslie and Ben are soulmates and the writers have said so much, and Andy and April are soulmates, the writers have said so much. So like, it'd be weird from a writer's standpoint to be like, and everyone found each other in this closed environment and they all lived happily ever after. So to me, that felt a little tacked on. And I know it seems like Rob Lowe left for different reasons than Rashida Jones did. But I guess if they had to leave together, that would be a good way to do it.
Yeah, I don't know what the better way to do it. If they both wanted to leave in the middle of the season, you know, how else are you going to get them out? I think that you have to kind of tie them together. And they had the history, so it wasn't too far-fetched. But I see your point. I mean, I don't think it's the, you know, the greatest romance on Parks and Rec by a long shot. So,
yeah, absolutely.
In terms of cameo, so obviously John Hamm tonight was amazing. Werner Herzog being on Parks and Rec was that was a surprise. Yeah. I was very happy about that, to see him as the guy who sells the house to Andy and April, because he's an old man and he wants to go down to Florida to be I want to move to Orlando to be closer to Disney World.
Yeah, that's the thing I love about Parks and Rec, is that like you can
get Werner Herzog.
You can still like get people. There will be people in the crevices that can feasibly live in this town that you can bring forward. You can bring forward Patton Oswalt's character, who will go on to a 7-minute he'll do a 7-minute diatribe about what did he do about it last year? It was like the way Star Wars should end.
Yes, the Patton Oswalt filibuster.
Yeah, the filibuster, I think, where he talks about how how Star Wars Episode 7 should start.
Yeah, it was his pitch for Star Wars Episode 7 and how it was going to be a crossover with the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
And Thanos with his Infinity Gauntlet.
I love it. And then you have like Will Forte as the man who loved Twilight. They wanted to put in the capsule. I remember there was like the artsy adult video store owner. There's like like I said before, it's an amazing cast of characters. And to round it all up, you have the one and only Oren. If you remember Oren, Josh.
Who is Oren?
Oren is April's friend, like the really pasty looking kid with like the mop hair.
Oh, yes.
I love me some Oren.
That's right. He's a good character.
I want to see more Oren characters. I do admit, I hope they didn't blow their load a little bit with the Greg Pakaitis cameo last season, because I love that running storyline of Greg Pakaitis.
Yeah. What do you think in terms of political figures? You know, they've had Joe Biden on the show. They had John McCain. Do you think that they could get Barack Obama on this show?
I'm sure they could. But I mean,
they've gotten Michelle.
Yeah, they've gotten Michelle.
They've gotten Joe Biden. I feel like if they want it, they can get it.
Oh yeah, I'm surprised they didn't get Hillary, or maybe they will this season, considering that Hillary
that's Leslie's number one.
Yeah, it's one of
other
the
than
pictures.
Joe Biden.
Yeah, it's one of the pictures she has. Yeah, she's the one political figure that Leslie wouldn't want to do.
Exactly.
So I think she'd make an amazing cameo. So we'll see. Maybe I don't know how much these producers are keeping under wraps in terms of how
you got to imagine a lot.
Yeah. So maybe she'll get a cameo. I'm trying to think of like other, if not a Hillary, maybe a Bill. I feel like Bill would be up for it.
So there's one blockbuster cameo that they have always said they want to do, but have not been able to do. And it's the person that they want for the mayor of Pawnee. They've never shown the mayor of Pawnee. And that's because the only person they're willing to identify as the mayor of Pawnee is Bill Murray. And I would really hope that in this final stretch of episodes that they can get Bill Murray as the mayor of Pawnee.
If the last episode is a slow pan out of everyone in the Parks Department and it turns out that it's a snow globe in Bill Murray's mayor's office, I will be completely satisfied with that.
How great would that be?
That would be amazing.
It would be pretty good. Also, just before we leave talking about these last two episodes that we just saw, these first two episodes, when are we going to start the weekly recaps on Pusher recaps of Johnny Karate Super Awesome Musical Explosion Show?
You know what? It's in the works.
Is that a you and Kurt original? You and Kurt Clark?
It might have to be. I don't know. It might have to involve some My Little Ponies if we get Kurt on board. But you know what? I can watch Jerry as a mailman get beat up by ninjas probably about 24 hours a day. So.
Ninjas attack!
And I love that storyline too with the Johnny Karate stuff. And I don't know if you saw last year, Josh, there was a secret scene of Chris Pratt at that kid's birthday party playing, making up a song about sudden death with the Jean-Claude Van Damme movie.
I think so. That sounds familiar.
Yeah, he like sung the whole plot of the movie and came up with a song about it.
I wonder how Mouse Rat's doing.
Well, they got together briefly at the Unity concert last year, but then I'm assuming in the 3 years they separated again.
Oh, that's so dark. I hope not.
I want to hear The Pit one more time. We've heard 5,000 Candles in the Wind a lot, and I love that song, but I do love The Pit is when I initially...
I fell into the pit.
Yeah, and I love... I mean, there's many things to love about Chris Pratt's performance, but one of them is definitely the fact that he puts on this, like, Nickelback voice.
The pit, yeah.
Like a Scott Stapp voice.
It's so funny. It's great. It just, like, to imagine that for Andy Dwyer, like, that's the pinnacle of music is so funny.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. And Chris Pratt actually tweeted a fun picture that, like, somebody... actually made like a mouse rat guitar for him.
Really?
And wrote like Andy Dwyer in the frets.
Oh my God, that's so good. That's great. All right, so let's start to wrap up here. What do you think, Mike? How's this show going to end? Do you have any kind of insight into how you think Parks and Rec ends, or honestly, does it matter?
See, it's such a big.
This feels like a hard show to mess up in the final stretch.
I agree.
I feel like that's one of the nice things about a show like Parks and Rec versus like a Breaking Bad or a Lost. Like, I don't feel like there's a lot of pressure here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's such a character-driven show as well, and unlike a show like Lost, which is a character-driven show, but there are inherent external mysteries that the audience inevitably wants solved. There's really nothing here for people. People aren't dying to know, you know, oh, you know, what happened to Eagleton? Did they get all the chocolate out of the river?
Right. I hope not, because the fish tastes so good right
exactly.
now.
Oh, I would go for some chocolate fish right now.
Chocolate fish sounds amazing. How about that after our Hawaiian pizza? That could be our dessert.
Yeah, I'm glad all the viewers are privy to our plans after podcasting right now.
They're joining us. You're all coming with us, right, guys?
Oh, God. Reservation for what? 50?
I don't know. Probably like 5.
12?
5 to 12.
So, I would say if I can make a bold prediction as to the ending, I do think that, like you said, it's going to be a happy ending. I do think Ron will relent and Leslie will turn, the land will be turned into a national park. And I believe everyone will kind of, you know, live happily ever after as friends. I think Tom and Lucy will get back together. Do I really wished the Tatiana Maslany character came back, just because the more Orphan Black that seeps into our main culture, the better.
The better. Says the British contingent of Post Show Recaps, or one half, you and AJ Mass.
Yay, verily.
Verily.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the stakes just are not terribly high. Even for a sitcom, like, there's no, are Ross and Rachel going to get together in the end?
Exactly.
You know, like, there's nothing like that. The closest comparison to that on Parks and Rec is, will Leslie get the park made? And, you know, I feel like, yeah, probably, because that would be the great triumph of a show called Parks and Rec, for it to end with this great, amazing new park, whether it's the Newport National Park or what. Just to have Leslie kind of really succeed in that arena seems like the right way to go. But even if she fails, it's going to have some sort of happy ending. Like, she's still going to win. There's no losing for Leslie Knope. Leslie Knope is a winner forever. So, you know that this show is going to end with thumbs up. So I feel like this is a really, it would be, you'd have to work overtime to bring this show in for a rocky landing, I think.
Yeah.
You know, knock on wood. But I think it would be really hard for this show to end and, like, have kind of the legacy of even, like, a Seinfeld that, you know, the finale was fairly maligned when it came out. I feel like that's going to be a very hard thing for this show to do.
Yeah, and I feel like nobody is going to lose in this at the end of this show. Like, nobody, maybe Tammy, in the way we left her naked near the reference desk at the library. But I feel like, you know, even if, like, Bobby Newport comes back, or if we see, like, other antagonistic characters come back, I feel like they're not going to, like, be angry or despondent. They're going to be like, all right, you get fine. You can do this or you can do that. I'm done. And
right.
I feel like nobody's going to be, like, you know, cursing the day that Leslie Knope was born. Everyone's going to have a reasonably happy ending.
The losses, at the very least, will not be hopeless. You know,
yeah.
I feel like that's the thing, is that even the losses are hopeful. Like, I'm even thinking of poor little Sebastian. You know, poor one out right now. But, you know, even his sad demise led to, you know, one of the more touching moments in Parks and Recreation. So even at its worst, even in times of death, this is a show that can put a smile on your face. So I think, you know, worst case scenario, if poor Terry Gurgich drops dead at some point, I feel like, you know, they will find a way to make you know, true joyous comedy out of it.
Well,
I have a lot of faith in it.
He may die from another fart attack.
A lethal fart, a fatal fart attack.
Fatal fart attack again.
Oh, that would be horrible. That'd be such a brutal way for poor Terry to go.
I know.
Are we calling him Terry officially? It's what he seems to want to be referred to as.
Yeah, we might as well call. Yeah, we might as well go with Terry. But I feel like we might get a Barry at the end of the season. Maybe in death he'll be known as Barry because he'll be buried.
Yeah, he will be buried, Gergich.
Buried Gergich.
Oh my God, you just broke the ending of Parks and Rec. You just figured it out.
Is that going to be our hashtag?
Buried Gergich. No, I think our hashtag is going to be chocolate fish. And you guys should join us for dessert if you have gotten this far. Follow Mike on Twitter. He's at a Mike Bloom type. I'm at Round Howard, like Ron Howard, but rounder. I don't believe that we will be talking about Parks and Rec weekly, but Mike, I would love to at least talk about the show when all is said and done, when we get to that final episode. I think that you and I should get together and eulogize this very, very funny show.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's going to be plenty of this stuff coming and going on post-show recaps, aside from the great work Josh is doing on Justified right now. We have, I know you and AJ Mask got together earlier this day to talk about Twin Peaks. We might have a couple more one-time things coming around the bend as well. SNL's coming up soon, and before we know it, it's going to be Walking Dead, Game of Thrones, House of Cards, Once Upon a Time. Everything's going to be coming back into full swing.
Yeah, we're moving into the hot period right now. Things are heating up. Things are heating up for us here at Post Show Recaps. We hope you guys are enjoying. If you're not subscribed already, you should be. PostShowRecaps.com/iTunes. It's the right thing to do. If you've got any feedback for us also, please send that our way. We would love to hear from you guys. PostShowRecaps.com/feedback. Other than that, Mike, do you have anything else?
No, this was a good time.
This was a great podcast.
Technically homeless.
Technically homeless. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening, and take care, everyone. Bye.
Someday we'll saddle up again, and I know I'll always miss my horsiest friend. Spread your wings and fly, spread your wings and fly.